Radiotopia.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts. This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Now, as you all are quietly listening, we would like to take you to the city of Mayfield, the extremely troubled and exciting world of intrigue and amazement.
From PureX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil. Today on the show, a lonely teenager in the 1970s retreats to his bedroom and creates an entire media empire that exists only in his mind.
February 14th, 1998.
Sixth grade.
Dear diary.
Dear Jesus.
Dear sweet asswad.
Adults sharing the embarrassing things
they created as kids.
So I wrote poems about masturbation.
Before an audience
of total strangers.
I feel like an idiot.
I'm the only normal one in my entire family.
Mom, you can't read this.
These are the stories hidden inside
the pages of our past.
Hi, I'm Will, and when I was 15, it was 1980, and I lived in Escondido, California, and it was beautiful. I lived right down the hill from my grandparents, who were the most awesome people ever, and then my parents got a divorce, and the shit hit the fan.
That's Will Seymour on the Mortified stage in Oakland. As you can probably tell, when he was a teenager, his life took a big, unexpected turn.
We had to move. I moved with my mom and my two sisters to Lake Tahoe. And right away, I had trouble in school. I got targeted for what I think they thought was effeminate. My voice, kind of everything I did was a big red target. I was getting beat up in school to the point where, I couldn't get through the day. A couple of teachers ignored it. And they were sort of like, well, just stop acting like that. Stop being like that. And I think I had one big assault where someone hit me with a big stick in a hallway. And I thought, these kids are going to kill me. Like, I cannot go to school here. And so I stopped going entirely.
Will was going through a tough time, but what he did about it was quite extraordinary. Today, we're shaking up the format with a very special Beyond the Stage episode, where we sit down with a performer for an extended conversation about a truly unique story in their past. And in Will's case, his story begins as a result of a simple request to stay in touch.
Very tough to say goodbye to grandmother. She had emphysema in the last years of her life. And so I moved right at a time where, we kind of knew time was limited. So it felt like, it's impossible to not be in touch.
We wrote a lot of letters back and forth, which was cool. And then we tried phone call situation, but long distance was like $300. And then she had a really good idea. Record a tape. make a tape. We could hear your voices and hear what's going on. Something short, something cute. Update us on what's going on. And that was a really great idea, except I decided to not go to school and shoplifted and watched soap operas. And I didn't want to put that on a tape, but I made a tape. I think we're going to play some of it. I may have taken my grandmother's idea too far. And remember, she's thinking it's going to be short and sweet and, you know, cute. So just imagine cute grandma putting this tape in her tape player.
Live from the Metro Towers Mecca Studios in New York City, we bring you KNYB Entertainment Radio. Hello and welcome to KNYB, bringing you the only old radio entertainment available to you. This is Tape 4, Volume 1. Now an entire 90 minutes of great live radio entertainment.
Yeah. KNYB Entertainment Radio. I was 90 minutes long, and that was my voice. But the whole thing gave me like great opportunity, a real excuse to stay home from school and write. I had a lot of material to write. I had to write the talk show, Schmavid Kincaid Live. I had to write the KNYB Evening News. I had to write movie spoofs. I had to write that Western, Rancid Harvest. I had so much to do, and I used all the equipment that I had at home. I had my stereo and with the mic going into an 8-track, and then I pre-recorded stuff, and I had it on a handheld portable Panasonic cassette player, and then I had the record player for all the sound effects and, you know, score.
So where did you get all this audio equipment from?
I had a very limited budget based on some babysitting early on. We didn't have any money, so I shoplifted most of the small items and a few of the big items.
How long did it take you to make a 90-minute tape?
I think it took months, because I had to write everything. I think it took about 3 weeks to get the whole thing together on paper, handwritten. While I was doing that, I was figuring out the production schedule of it. It would take a good 3.5 months, right around that.
And then would you go through the whole thing live, a whole 90 minutes doing it live?
Big chunks at a time. When you're recording on an 8-track, you can't press pause. So, or at least I didn't know how to. So once I pressed record, that was it. Whatever we captured was all we had.
So here's a clip from a Western that I wrote. I really just adapted it from homework from civics class. And it's a show about a superhero, so that's really exciting, except he was fighting water waste.
Now, to the present. Marvin grows up to become a mild-mannered adult. One night in late September, after pepperoni pizza dinner, Marvin, as you might guess, has a nightmare. He dreams the water bandit is turning on the main water valve of the world. Upon awakening, that does it. I gotta stop the water bandit, but pronto. But how? I've got it. I'll become
Captain Hydro. I am Captain Hydro.
Marvin decides he must fight in a costume to strike fear and terror in the hearts of all evildoers. But first, he has to pick the right outfit.
What inspired me right around this time, I got a biography of Judy Garland, and surprising. I loved it. And I read it, and I was completely blown away and offended and excited about the MGM studio system. I was like, I wanted to be both the tortured actor performer and then the super controlling, awful entertainment empire mogul. So I started smoking Benson and Hedges cigarettes, and does that seem like the most New York cigarette I could find? And I popped caffeine pills and I created an empire. I put my two sisters under contract. They were 11 and 8 and not good readers. They did earn 5 cents a month, which I never paid them, for unlimited recording time in the studio, which was my bedroom. And I have since apologized. Almost every 10 years, I re-apologize.
So how do they deal with this when you hand them the contracts?
My sisters are so awesome. They were really down to play, and they thought it was really fun. And, you know, in the beginning, it was really fun.
I'm Liz, Will's baby sister.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Elizabeth Clampton.
I don't remember my brother asking us permission for us to do it. He's our older brother, and I think it was just, this is what we're going to do. In a loving way, it was a dictatorship after school. And most kids would want to just snuggle up and, you know, eat macaroni and cheese and watch Fraggle Rock on the couch. But instead, we'd come home and we would basically start the second session of our day. It was another world where we became different people. On those KNYB days, I'd walk into the house with the aroma of cinnamon toast. My brother would toast up a loaf of cinnamon toast. So he just got us all sugared up and ready, you know, and kind of all hyper and excited for the next portion of our day. My mom worked two jobs. She wouldn't get home till work till like 8:30 at night. And we would work right after school, you know, have our snack, start working. My brother would make us a quick dinner, and then we would still be working until my mom got home. And our day wouldn't end until my mom came home to save us. So they were very long days, like really long days.
And so what kind of characters did you have these 8 and 10-year-olds play?
They had to play these really serious characters. I think that I was so angry, I ended up writing material that was sort of based on my life. So I was working out divorce. One of them played, you know, this divorcee on her second marriage. They played murderers. They played barmaids, nurses that were being sexually harassed, mean doctors. It was just like, you know, I was working out a lot of important issues.
From the original soap opera, Love of Nerd, formerly Love of Life, we bring you... No Life to Live.
Did it ever strike them that they're like being given characters that are like perhaps way beyond their comprehension?
I think the beauty of what they did and that you can hear in the recording is I gave it to them fresh. They read it right off the page. They had no comprehension really of the whole big picture because I would only give little bits of the whole thing and they never really heard the final product. They didn't get a copy of the tape when it was finished.
So the next clip is from a soap opera that I wrote, and it was kind of like loosely based on my life. In this clip, my youngest sister plays Regina Rumor, a frustrated woman on her second marriage with a dark secret and a hyperactive son. And I play her new husband, the abusive Josh Jealous. She was reading at a fourth grade level, but I think we worked around it.
Josh, honey, please remember to scrape the walk of all the ice and snow before you go to work.
Oh, I've got time. I'll do it later. Anyway, how's your son, Raymond?
How many times have I asked you to just accept Ray as your own son, and you don't have to refer to him as my son. He's your son too. Now he might hear you. Keep it down.
Let's just drop the subject.
Yeah, I had no idea how to read sentences. We didn't have a lot of time. So if you make a mistake, you have to stop, press eject, turn the 8-track around, press fast forward. So you wanted to make sure you got it right the first time so you didn't stress out my brother. Like, I felt stress. I was 7 years old, really stressed out to make it right. And quite honestly, because I felt so fearful to get the words wrong, I had a lot of stuttering problems because I was so stressed out reading in front of my brother. So I really applied myself to memorize the words my brother gave me just to ensure I got things right.
Now for the latest from the fashion world. It is good news for men. Women are going to wear their dresses. Yeah. And now for the latest from, yeah. And now for the latest from the fashion world. It is good news for men. Women are not going to wear their dresses any longer this year.
So I got so into this and I thought that was so good that I decided everybody should hear it, not just my grandmother. I thought I would copy it and give it away and then people would buy it. They would subscribe and I would make money and, you know, I would really turn the tide here. So I made this elaborate subscription package. I hand did all of them. I gave them all the cassette and a cover letter from an executive. And I hand drew a fan magazine called Limelight Magazine. Now this one has a feature story on Judy Garland. It's funny. What's great is it features like tons of gossip and blind items about KNYB stars and lots of features about what they're doing. And keep in mind that it's like me and my 8-year-old and 11-year-old sisters, and then a shit ton of imaginary people. I created these packets, and then I sent one to my grandmother, and then I included my cousin Stephanie, my aunt Sue. I gave them to everyone at the First Baptist Church where we went. And then I gave them out in front of a market on Highway 50 to tourists.
What did people think when you were handing them this tape?
Most people ignored me. And then, but there were people that talked to me that wanted to know, you know, what was it and what are they supposed to do? And I just said, hey, I made a radio station. Do you want to hear it? And I had envelopes with these tapes in them and take a listen and, you know, all the information's in there. If you'd like to subscribe, I think because I was young, people were, I'm a little concerned probably. I think they were a little concerned, very, very, very curious.
Can you describe the fan magazine?
The fan magazine is probably the weirdest thing that was created out of this. I haven't done enough therapy on this one to justify it, but I can explain to you that we all had alter egos that we were, it's sort of like playing, if you're playing a house, we were playing radio stars. So we all had names. Our famous people had names. They had huge careers that we had all kind of outlined in our imaginary world.
So here's my question.
Uh-oh.
Someone gets this tape in this package.
Yeah.
They might look at the tape and go, oh, wow, that took a lot of effort. But the first thing they're going to see is the Limelight magazine, which is about these people that don't exist that are in this tape. So that's their first impression.
And the thing is, the magazine had photographs. Like, we had to have photo shoots to represent those actors. So my sisters and I would get in makeup and hair and costume and do photo shoots.
Our bodies were always in these like funky poses, and he'd be like, smile with your eyes, but not your face. And I still remember the tackiness of my mom's lip gloss and how it tasted and smelled and how he would put it on with such perfection. How those photo shoots were, they were fun, but they were also very serious because we had Polaroid camera at the time and those were expensive. So you had to make sure you got the right shot at the right time because, you know, you only had one shot, you know?
So here's the cover letter that came with the tape. I didn't write it from me because no one's going to listen to some 15-year-old. So this is from the executive who runs the multimedia conglomerate that ran the company that owned the radio station KNYB. So you want to listen to this guy. KNYB is a pre-recorded program for your convenience. A discount membership card will be sent to you so that you may receive considerable price reductions. No one ever paid. Also, the fan club is offered to you. No one ever joined. Do not attempt to record over KNYB material. We hope you enjoy KNYB. Signed, Lyndon Towers, Metro Towers Mecca Executive. Right? Very classy. So they're all handed out. You got this, but you also got a critique sheet with it and a key so you could rate all 20 shows that were on your 90-minute cassette. And then you could send it back to me. And lots of people sent the critique sheets back. They really did. And boy. So my 12-year-old cousin Stephanie from Poway, California, she wrote me a note after getting her tape. Things could be changed, of course, but for a rough draft, it was excellent. And that was a really sweet note, but it was definitely not a rough draft. That was very much my final draft. She wouldn't know that. This is from Steve, a man who went to the First Baptist Church. Lots of extraneous sounds and no life to live. Must be editing sounds. The transition from the doctor scene to the mumbling Nazi midget was too abrupt. Yeah, it leaves one wondering, what happened?
And I also played songs too, so this is his response to me, including Physical by Olivia Newton-John.
This record is in poor taste, and it is all too graphic in respects to the sex act, which should be kept private. It exemplifies the moral decay in today's society, thereby fulfilling many prophecies written in God's work.
Okay.
Was your grandmother's reaction the most important reaction?
That was completely exciting to send out a tape and then wait, go down. We had to go down to the lodge to get our mail. So every day I'm running down there to get my mail to hopefully get all these critique sheets back. So it's really, really, really exciting to get a letter from her, to get anything from her. And she's bedridden. So to get this back is so great.
And then my grandmother filled one out. There's some comments, which I'll read. We played the tape 4 or 5 times to hear it all. Did you realize the sound was bad? It might be our set, but parts of it we could not understand. Play it back on your set and don't touch the volume and see what you think. We're not losing our hearing. Sound is a real problem. We would like to hear more about yourselves and what you're doing in school. Lastly, let's get this spelling correct. Comments, COMMENTS. Excellent, EXCELLENT. And critique, CRITIQUE. Thank you. Love, Grandma. So, universally, the feedback was not good. Tape after tape after tape after tape. Same thing. I could not fix the sound. Nobody subscribed ever. My sisters refused to do any more tapes, and I was failing high school. So I had to pack up KNYB once and for all and the entire huge imaginary world that went with it.
Why did you decide to take it down?
Well, That was a very hard time, actually. Very hard time in my life because I decided that I could not live in Lake Tahoe anymore. And I couldn't live in that house and I couldn't go to school there. I'd made two friends in 3 years. I remember thinking, this is over. I took all the scripts, took all the paper, you know, all the notebooks, all my writing, some clothes, but it was a really tough time.
Because it was the only safe place you had at the time?
That's all I had.
It was his life. I remember being so sad. My brother always told me he loved me and would always protect me. And I remember when he left and I was very sad. Because he was the man of our house and he took care of my sister and I. And him leaving, I think to me, felt like another loss of a male, you know, like a dad, another loss of a dad. So I was very sad.
Hello, we at KNYB hope you enjoy tape one. Thank you for listening.
You mentioned that it got so bad that at some point you thought about killing yourself. Can you tell me like how close that got?
I tried to commit suicide and I ended up just making myself very, very, very sick. I was like really obsessed with caffeine tablets. And to me, it seemed like that was really cool because I was on uppers and writing and, you know, it was just such a weird thing to do. And so I took a lot of them. And then I took a lot of everything else that was in the medicine cabinet. And I don't advise that. It was a really bad idea. You know, I was ashamed of the why, and I was ashamed that I did it. And I just dealt with it on my own for a couple of days. And I think it was like 2 days of being very, very sick. And then, you know, and that's when I sort of thought, all right, I'm in charge. I've got this far. What's the plan? I decided to make enough money to buy my mom's car or any car and make arrangements to get out of that town.
Economical Tours presents the vacation for a poor family. Enjoy our 3-day blast in Hiroshima. Visit the booming city, popular from World War II. Hope you have a blast. See your travel agent now.
How much time did you end up getting with your grandmother once you moved back? How long was it that she was alive?
Maybe another, let's say 9 months to a year with my grandmother before she died. She was in the hospital very briefly, and I went in to see her, and she told me that one of the nurses was gay. And I said, okay, why are you telling me this? And she said, yeah, I think he's gay. And I think that's pretty great. And she talked about the future and, that she could see a really, bright glow in my future. And, you know, this kind of like beautiful babble that was kind of going on. And she passed away, maybe 2-3 days later.
When your grandmother died,
yeah.
Did you help pack up her stuff?
Yeah.
Did you come across your tapes?
I helped my mom and we all kind of, you know, did that together. But I found the tapes. I found all the letters that I wrote her, 3-ring binders full of all the things that I'd ever sent her.
For someone who went through years of not feeling seen or valued, to know that someone was meticulously keeping your correspondence, wasn't that?
Yeah. I think absolutely, having been completely alone, totally isolated, reaching out with a strange tape or a letter or whatever it is that I was creating to, you know, rifle through this folder and see every single thing, you know, it was really beautiful. That really is, at that time, the only person that really understood who I was and, you know, it was very reaffirming. She was definitely saving my life. You know, imaginary worlds are pretty cool and they're really safe places.
Take that!
But
and that.
Can't live there forever, you know? It doesn't mean it wasn't really cool. And for most people, it'll just be funny.
You haven't seen the last of me yet, Hydro.
But for me and my sisters, I think we'll always look back on that and go, wow, I can't believe we survived that. I work with teenagers in an after-school program that I started it with a group of people 20 years ago. I didn't have an after-school program. I didn't have anywhere to go, but I used art as a way to reach out. I remember at one of our middle schools years and years and years ago, there was a boy that was absolutely different than everyone else, and in the greatest way possible, in the way that he dressed and everything that he did. And at some point he said to me, okay, Mr. Will, I'm leaving. I'm going to go hang out with my gay friends. And I thought, wow, that's so interesting that he would share that information with me. And I said, oh, that sounds great. Have fun. And it was so great to, oh, yay, I get to encourage this kid. And so I get, you know, hundreds of those every year.
Escondido, California, July 23rd. At 11 a.m., I called to go to Graham's alone to talk to her about being different. She gave me a box of mementos that I just loved. We talked about everything from A to Z. After, I took a nap. I thought of a title for a book. Put the skeleton in a closet. And lock the door. But save the key. Thank you.
That was Will Seymour sharing his childhood radio recordings with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. Now a few postscripts. Remember when Will gave his KNYB feedback card to his younger cousin Stephanie, asking the 12-year-old for her thoughts on his elaborate radio shows? Well, at the time, Stephanie wrote, "It's great," for a rough draft. Well, as it turned out, that opinionated little girl grew up to be a supermodel, Stephanie Seymour, known for Vogue and Sports Illustrated. So we thought now that some decades have passed, we'd find out if she had a second opinion on Will's cassettes. So Will sent her the recordings, and this is what she had to say.
Hey, Bill, this is Cousin Steph. I listened to the recordings again today. They are amazing. But it's still a rough draft, I think. Anyhow, I love you.
Despite her praise, as of this recording, Stephanie has yet to pay for her KNYB subscription. Gotta walk the walk, Stephanie. Also, if you want to hear another heartbreaking story about the years Will spent growing up in Lake Tahoe, check out Mortified's appearance on an episode of This American Life, titled Parental Guidance. And if you want to see what the KNYB subscription package actually looks like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, as we'll be sure to post those images throughout the week. And visit the new and improved GetMortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode of this series. As many of you know, the Mortified podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp, who celebrate creativity, chaos, and teamwork. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Kathy Tu, Pierce Priscelli, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Katcher. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake Snake Snakes. Additional thanks to Will Dwyer, Aparna Kumar, Lance Roberts, Will Seymour, Lizzie Weiss, Stephanie Seymour, the new parish in Oakland, and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survived. If 15-year-old Will Seymour was ending this podcast episode, how would he end it?
How would he end it? He'd probably play a Judy Garland song.
What song?
Get Happy.
How does that go?
Forget your troubles, come on, get happy. You better chase all your cares away.
Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. Get ready for the judgment day. The sun is shining, come on, get happy. The Lord is waiting to take your hand. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. We're going to the promised land.